Hello and welcome back to Trees a Crowd. My name is David Oakes, and this is a podcast for those of you who, like me, think the natural world is incredible. Whether preserving things peaty or spraying graffiti, I get to speak to those people dedicated to or inspired by our natural world. Such is the privilege of a day job that takes me to different corners of the world. This month's episode is another I recorded earlier in the year whilst based in Cape Town. In fact, it is the penultimate episode of this African micro series, and as you will shortly hear, we talk not purely about African wildlife, but about the human nature that fills the streets of Cape Town, about the ownership of space, and how access to nature sadly remains a privilege not open to everyone. However, if you are lucky enough to walk free through Cape Town, it won't be long before you're confronted with the street art of someone called Nardstar. Large, vibrantly coloured, geometric representations of women of colour accompanied by striking examples of African wildlife. During the 2 months that I spent in South Africa, I encountered her work in aquariums and in game reserves, on city walls and even on giant synthetic rhinoceroses. And yet she has also collaborated with the likes of Converse, Marvel, the WWF, and many, many more. As such, I wanted to meet Nardstar to celebrate her drawing of giant women and giant animals on walls. So, this is Trees a Crowd, and this is Nardia Fisher.
In the depth of the forest, an old oak grew, the pride of the greenwood there. O'er his branches the ivy her mantle threw, when the forest boughs were bare. Oh, the oak and the ivy, oh, the oak and the ivy, oh.
I am someone that started off painting without the aim of making a career out of it, and it kind of just developed in that way.
Definitely street painting or painting in general?
I started, well, painting the street, because I went to study fine art, and I dropped out after a year because I was painting walls, and I was like, okay, cool, let me see where this goes, because that was where I had like that clicking feeling, like, okay, yeah, this is the art form that works for me.
You were studying, is this at the Ruth Prowse School?
Yeah.
Were they pleased that you dropped out? Like, how did they take it? Did they think that you were sort of throwing in a wonderful career in fine arts and were going off into the dark, dark underbelly? Or was it like, no, you found yourself best in life?
I kind of had a weird like relationship with the school and the teachers, because they felt like I didn't take direction very well. Like, I didn't listen to what they were saying. But at the same time, I got like a certificate for academic excellence.
Okay.
And then I dropped out. So it was like a weird, situation. But I felt like that was the right thing to do.
So what were you doing then? So you left the school and went onto the streets?
Yeah, so I was busy, like, through that year, I was doing my school stuff, and then I was painting a lot on the street and...
Legally? Illegally?
Legally and illegally.
Okay.
And I was, like, just became obsessed with finding my style and developing the look and feel of my street work. So when I dropped out, then I was doing design work, like freelance, to kind of fund my art. And I just became like obsessed with developing the style. I spent like that time after art school, I was just like completely cut myself off from like graffiti blogs, and I didn't want to watch like any documentaries because I was obsessed with the style thing. I just wanted to create like an authentic Nardstar style.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was focused on, and then people started seeing the work that I was doing on the street, and then from there that was like how I started getting commissions and things.
Would you design everything before you went out? I mean, it's already clear to me that you want sort of a very definite framework, and there's a geometric style and a colourful style to your work. Like, did you go out to a blank wall and see what the wall gave you, or did you always go out with a plan of what you wanted to put on it?
Yeah, I think I mostly always had a plan, because I was always like sketching things, and then I would like choose something that I want to sketch and go out and find a spot for it. or the other way around, find a spot and then sketch for the
spot. Specifically for that location. What is Cape Town's stance on wall art? Does it appreciate it? I mean, we're here in Woodstock, and there's not a huge amount of wall art around here, which is surprising for the sort of zhuzhy hipster end of town.
So, Cape Town has a graffiti bylaw at the moment. It's called the graffiti bylaw, but it covers everything on walls, like street art and mural art, and even kind of like sign writing, advertising things. So there's a whole lot of rules underneath this graffiti bylaw, and basically artists need to get a permit from the city to paint on walls. Mm-hmm. So because of this bylaw, it made artists like me that has been painting for like since before the bylaw, it doesn't make you feel like the art is appreciated because it's less accessible. It doesn't deter artists that are doing it illegally, but artists that are kind of like seeking out walls, going to homeowners and things like that, or recreationally painting on the weekends, like it stops those artists. So the scene in Cape Town has kind of slowed down a lot because of that.
But that's not, I always kind of hoped that if you made it harder for people to do work, that they would seek out more illegal routes. Is that not the case? Is the punishment too extreme?
So what happens with the bylaw is that you can get fined or thrown in prison. So if you've been fined like once or twice, then they will lock you up. And then they also threatened building owners with fines if they didn't
destroy the work that was on the wall.
Yes. Okay. And the city spent a lot of money on like a graffiti cleanup squad, which didn't like differentiate between graffiti, vandalism, street art, whatever. They just like go and cleaned up everything.
If you don't have a permit, it doesn't belong.
Yeah. So even like very old walls, they went over walls that have been there since the beginning of graffiti and street art in Cape Town, and even like anti-apartheid murals and things, they just painted over it.
I mean, one of the stories that we always saw on the news all the time growing up about South Africa was having Free Mandela on pretty much every single wall. Like the whole thing was about, that's how a lot of the messaging sort of kicked off the revolution. I haven't seen any of that anywhere. Yeah.
There used to be some, but it's been painted over.
Do you think that's a metaphor for the success of the removal of apartheid, or do you think that's me digging far too deeply into it?
I think it kind of is a way, because it has to do with like space and the ownership of space and who has the right to the wall spaces and the land spaces. So it's all kind of linked, you know.
Do you think you can own space? Do you think one should own space? I ask that as I've spent a lot of time in national parks lately, and I've been around the country and up into Namibia and sort of seen how land management has caused so many problems over the years, and how even the trying to return it back to the people who used to live there before has also proved its own problems.
Yeah, I think if you know the situation in Cape Town and how space and land has been used, basically it's called spatial violence, right? Mm. So how people have been placed to kind of separate them and keep them, to forcibly make them disadvantaged. So do I think people should own space in that case? Like, yes, I do. I do think that people should be given land back and given space back to exist where they were moved from.
So your work in particular, and excuse any mispronunciations along the way, there's one work called Auntie Tai Tai Titi?
No.
Tia Tia?
It's Auntie Titi Mummy.
Auntie Titi Mummy, and that's a South African woman with a caracal and a protea.
Yeah.
There's Concreto, which is a South African woman and a Brazilian woman with a South African protea and a Brazilian orchid. There's Make-A-Wish, which is a woman with ladybirds. There's Think for Yourself, which is a woman with grey parrots. There's a Lion Queen with a woman and an animal. You can see where I'm going with this. What's the point of your art? What are you trying to present?
At the moment, for a while now, it's been representation of women of colour. Because when I started doing graffiti, it was all letter-based and When you paint graffiti, it's mostly for other graffiti writers. But the more I started painting other things, I could see like how it affects the communities that it exists in, because around Cape Town, it's easier to paint in poorer communities than it is to paint in the city center. So when you go into these communities and you paint there, the people interact with the art.
Sure.
So then I started feeling like that sense of responsibility, that as an artist that's coming into other people's spaces, what am I leaving for them, and also what is my story that I'm sharing, or what have I been through that I also want to like kind of address.
Uh-huh.
And for me as a woman, I'm always underrepresented within my art scene, and it's like very rare to see women picking up spray cans and starting to paint, especially in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of started painting women that look like me, kind of, or mm-hmm. look like the women around here, to kind of inspire them to feel celebrated, to feel like they're worth being put up on a wall, that they have value as well.
And to give them ownership of the space as well as just value in themselves, or?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the women. Why the animals and the flowers? Where does the nature come into it?
I use the animals to like kind of represent the characteristics, like the strength and the inner world of the women, because you can't show that with a portrait. So I have to find other ways to represent it.
Why do you think people's inner self is like the natural world? Why are people like a lion? Why are people like a protea? Why a caracal? Why? Because that's not everyone sees the world that way. I'm not saying you're wrong. I think you're very definitely correct. But why do you think that?
I think it's because like the way we interact with nature, we can't like directly communicate with it. So when we see a wildcat, what do we see? We see the strength, the power, those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's how I translated it.
Are the people that you paint, are they portraits, or are they real people, or are they people that look like real people?
They are people that look like real people. So I do use references, but then the reference is just like a inspiration starting
sure.
point, and I kind of just like, I don't want it to look exactly like the reference.
Sure.
Yeah.
I guess that's good for things like, there was the Ubuntu one with, which was representative of whole communities. I guess you
yeah.
don't want to go, these four people are fine.
Yeah.
But you're not.
It's kind of like to see yourself in it, but it's not a specific person.
Do you find that if you're giving women something to be proud of by putting women on the wall, do you feel that by putting animals on the wall, you're trying to bring the countryside into the city?
Yes, definitely.
Is that a thing?
Like, yeah.
Because
yeah,
I mean, definitely. I come here as a traveler of the world, and I've seen a lot of cities, and
yeah.
there's a lot of nature in Cape Town.
Yeah.
The sea's right there, the mountains are right there.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the residents miss that? Or do you think that Africa is so abundant with life that you still have to bring yet more into Cape Town to make them realize that?
Well, like, Cape Town is a unique city because it is surrounded by all these mountains and seas and things. But at the same time, people that live in the city and that don't live in the city center right here
mm-hmm.
and can just go to Table Mountain in 10 minutes or go to a beach, a 10-minute drive or whatever, they live in these, like, informal settlements and what we call the Cape Flats, which is quite far from nature. It's a
mm-hmm.
bit more like inland. And some of these people, they have not been to the sea.
Sure.
They don't get to go up the mountain all the time. And it's kind of, I think that was part of the reason why I wanted to like reconnect the streets with the nature as well.
Was your childhood full of nature?
Yes, it was.
How so? Tell me about it.
Well, my parents, they like made an effort to take me out on hikes and take me to the sea and things. But I think for Cape Townians, that comes as a privilege to be able to go to the sea, because you need to have a car.
Sure.
You need to have money to be able to get there, especially if you stay, if you've been moved out of the city and you stay like more than half an hour away from Cape Town. So you need to be able to go. So I was privileged to be able to spend my summers going to the beach and spending time on the mountains and things.
There's a piece of work that you did, which was in collaboration with Converse.
Yes.
Which used a kind of paint, which I wrote it down. Graphenstone Ecological Air Purifying Paint. Was that all of it there?
Yeah.
You've got a bit left over.
They gave me too much.
There's a whole wall worth of paint.
Yeah.
That's mad. Okay, so, okay, well, there's a question. How the hell is that ecological air purifying paint?
I have no idea.
No idea. Yeah, I read that it sort of gets carbon dioxide to stick to it and then sort of extracts it from the environment in that way.
That's what they say.
That's what they say. Do you believe them?
I don't know. I don't. I don't understand the science behind it.
It's a bold choice and a wonderful PR agenda. So let's hope that they're correct.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's that piece of work that you did that is technically taking CO2 out of the oxygen by the miracles of science. There was another piece of work that you did that said, I think it was climate change is real.
Yeah.
There was also another piece called Camisa, which was all about water.
Yeah.
Which you did in collaboration with the Danish government?
The Danish Embassy and WWF and Table Mountain National Park.
So here's a question. Are these people who obviously see you as someone who has an ecological agenda, seeking you out because you do animals and they go, well, she likes animals, so therefore she'll be good for our message? Or do you have an ecological agenda yourself?
Well, I'm selective about which commissions I do.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody comes to me and is like, hey, can you paint a portrait of someone smoking 1,000 cigarettes? I'm going to be like, no, that's not really my vibe. So I do choose commissions that are aligned with my work.
So you agree that climate change is real?
Yes, I do.
How do you think then, therefore, that street art can help with that? And do you think that the pressing nature of climate change is such that all street artists should embrace that reality and try and get change through the streets?
I don't know if you could in some way mobilize all street artists to have that message, because every artist has kind of their own agenda, you know.
Mm-hmm.
With climate change, it's such a weird topic that it's not like directly affecting everyone right now, like, you know.
Do you
like
not think it is?
It is, but I mean in a way that people are...
It's not the top of the agenda.
Their comfort level is compromised. So it's not like, oh, the electricity's out 24 hours. Let's go out and paint and do something because we're uncomfortable. So it will
be hard. The irony of what you're saying, though, is obviously we have load shedding in South Africa at the moment and the power is out for a number of hours, sometimes quite a lot of hours, depending on where you live and the time of the year. Whereas people in the UK are going, no, climate change is real, but they've still got electricity 24 hours a day. They haven't quite realised the repercussions of that. And obviously, the load shedding is a result of mismanagement of funds and governmental control. But the result is people turn to coal power stations instead of cleaner energies. And then when the coal doesn't create enough, you turn to diesel and you burn diesel. So, like, it's...
Yeah.
The
and
power
even,
outages exacerbate
even with
things.
The load shedding, like, it's just, like, 2 hours a day or 4 hours a day, it's not enough to make everyone like so pissed off that they go out and like...
It's not winter yet. You've got a couple of months to go and then
you've been through this for years. It's not like enough because they spaced it out just enough to keep everyone like okay. But if they had to do like a full on 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, then people would get angry enough and then maybe all the street artists would be out painting about like give our electricity back.
Do you think the ANC will roll out loads of extra electricity when it comes to the election week?
When it comes to elections, possibly.
Vote for us, look, we got the power back for a bit.
That's how it's been going. Like magically there's electricity for specific days and then we go into extreme load shedding schedule to balance it out.
One of the commissions you did was for a game reserve a few hours outside of Cape Town. Did you spend time at that reserve prior to doing that work to get know what to do, or did you go and know what you wanted to do?
No, I didn't, but I spent time there afterwards.
What do you think about it?
About the game reserve?
Yeah.
I think it's not really like a full-on game reserve like the Kruger National Park is. It's a lot smaller. Have you been there?
I have.
Oh, yeah.
This is a leading question.
So, yeah, I think it's a really, like, it's a lot smaller space. So it's not like really, it doesn't feel like a full-on nature. For me, it felt like a really big backyard or something, and there was animals there. But I do appreciate what they're doing for, like, rhino conservation. That's cool.
No, it's an interesting one. I've spent a lot of time sort of going around different reserves and different wild spaces whilst I've been here and sort of trying to work out what the difference is between a zoo, a game reserve, a national park, or true wilderness, and even if true wilderness exists or where we're going.
Yes.
And it's trying to sort of to work out the agenda for each of those different spaces, the purpose for it and what it can say. My experience of that particular reserve, which I'm not going to name, was that the brightest ray of sunshine I found there was your mural rather than the animals that didn't seem to have quite enough space and weren't eating quite enough real wild food and were being supplementary fed quite a lot of the time.
Yeah, they kind of fed like farm animals, you know, like they have their feeding trays and they all come there. That's why I said like it feels more like a like somebody's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if they have like a limit to how many animals there are. And also the lions are kept separate in like their own little enclosure.
There are three questions that I ask everyone who comes on the podcast.
Yeah.
There was one that I took out from the three and changed for a different one, which was, should we colonize the moon? And I don't ask it all the time anymore. But I thought I would ask you, but with a bended sort of twist to it. Should we be allowed to put graffiti or street art on the moon? Because there was talks years ago of Coca-Cola trying to get advertising on the moon.
Why?
And that kind of stuff. Why is it a good place to put your adverts and that kind of thing? Like, do you think that might be something useful or interesting to do? Or do you think this is just the most ridiculous question anyone has ever asked you?
No, I think, like, for me personally, I don't agree with street art or graffiti on, like, natural spaces. Like, I don't think that you should be putting up street art, like, on the mountains and things like that. I feel like it is, like, a on-building city thing.
Even if it makes a point? Even if the point that it makes hits home harder? There was a comedy sketch on a television show from the UK called Brass Eye, where eco-activists, it was pretend, it wasn't real, but they put graffiti, climate change graffiti, eco-graffiti, on the sides of cows. Like, they'd paint the cow right and then send the cow walking around with.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's a real thing or that we should do that, but do you think if you could get your message of gender equality and the truth of, the natural truth of power within people across more strongly, do you think it's something that should be explored?
Yeah, it depends on if it, like, how it is done.
Uh-huh.
Because they are like, I don't know if you've seen like these reverse graffiti things that are done. It's like uses the kind of like the mossiness of some walls and you just kind of use a high pressure hose with stencils and then it creates the image. So I think if it's done in ways like that, then maybe it can work.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Other than it takes the moss off the walls. Okay, the three questions I ask everyone who comes to the podcast. First question, if you could go for a walk anywhere in the world right now, where would it be?
Between Muizenberg Beach and St. James.
Why?
I think it's a really beautiful walk. Have you been there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a good beach.
It's one of the nicest sea walks because you walk right along the ocean. I think it's really cool.
It's always the ocean. The nature that you have said that you particularly like is the ocean.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I always feel like connected to the sea. It kind of has like this like balancing, cleansing effect on me. So if I'm feeling a bit like anxious about life, I can always go to the sea and it just like sorts me out. So
do you swim? Do you dive?
I don't dive, but I do swim. And yeah, my family's really big on swimming. So we spend a lot of time at the sea. So I don't know if it's because it's linked to my family or it's just the nature side, the effects of nature, but I think it's a bit of a mix of all of that. Because when I'm not in Cape Town, like even my boyfriend, he stays like an hour outside of Cape Town. Mm-hmm. And when I'm there, then I start missing the sea. So I don't know if I would be able to live somewhere that's away, like a bit far from the sea.
I always said that to my partner.
Yeah.
We grew up on the south coast of England. We're about an hour and a half's drive from the sea where we live now in any direction.
Yeah.
And I miss it. I always try and pretend that a water course is enough, so pop down to the river or whatever, but it's not
it's
quite.
It's not the same.
No.
There's like, yeah, there's something about the sea because you're swimming like at that point, the mm-hmm. starting point of it, and it just expands. So there's something like very overpowering about it. It's not quite the same.
Yeah.
Like swimming in a dam. Or
the water you get into will be different every second you're there. Yeah. And you have absolutely no control over how the world changes around you.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy the commission you did for the Two Oceans Aquarium then? On the inside, up on the stairwell, the long one with the turtles and the sharks.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first big commissions that I did.
Uh-huh.
And it was cool because they were very, they really wanted to like represent the oceans uh-huh. properly. So they gave me like this big book and I had to research the where the different fish go in the sea. So it was cool. I learned a lot there.
My daughter loves it. We've been to the aquarium a few times and she just runs up and down that big ramp looking at it all. It's fantastic. It's the first piece of work that I knowingly knew was yours when I saw it, although then I went, oh, well, that one's her as well, and that one's her as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's fantastic. So thank you for that one on behalf of my daughter. Second question. Who is your artistic hero?
I think I would say my dad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
My dad.
He was a journalist, wasn't he?
Yeah, he still is, kind of. Well, I don't know. He's more of like a writer now than like an active journalist. But I think because of the choices he made in pursuing his writing and his journalism, it's like a big part of why I was able to pursue my art.
How so? What did he write about and how did he write about it to be so inspirational?
I think, like, first of all, where he comes from, and during apartheid, people weren't allowed to be artists, like, professionally. He became a nurse, he became a teacher, he worked in a factory, like, those were kind of your options.
Mm-hmm.
So he made it a mission to pursue journalism and writing, which is kind of like, he was probably very misunderstood by his family, like, why is he doing this and why is he thinking so differently? Why? He always tells me the story about when he learned about like being vegetarian and decided to stop eating meat, and his family was like, what the hell's going on? Like, this is the weirdest thing ever. So I think because he pursued a different way of thinking and educated himself to what was happening around the world and became actively part of like fighting in the struggle against apartheid, it encouraged him to raise his daughters differently, because he has three daughters and we were always raised to like believe that they fought for our freedom mm-hmm. and now we have choices.
Is like, he proud of what lives. You're doing?
Yeah, I think
I
he's
mean,
very
as
proud
as a woman
of
in a man's industry.
Yeah, I think he is.
Are your sisters doing similar things?
One of my sisters is a writer as well.
Uh-huh.
And she does like writing and she works with artists and musicians and dancers. And then my other sister is a singer.
Amazing. Well, there's very definite a knock-on effect of his beliefs. That's amazing. And final question, if you could bring any species back from extinction, what would it be?
Dinosaurs. Have
you ever drawn a dinosaur?
Yeah. I did like a, I painted a velociraptor once, and she unintentionally looked very pretty. It was just the way.
You drew a pretty velociraptor.
She just, it was unintentional, it just happened. It was my energy going in there. And then I also did a dinosaur kind of as a background of a portrait of a friend of mine I did. But yeah, definitely dinosaurs. I don't know what specifically. I think I would like to see, like, okay, are you real?
If you were to do a self-portrait,
yeah.
And I don't know whether you've done one before. Have you done a self-portrait before?
I struggle with them.
Do you struggle with them because you don't know how to geometricalize and color your own face? Or do you struggle with you because you'd then have to choose a piece of nature to represent your inner self next to you?
No, I think I struggle with it because I feel like a lot of ways I feel like very separate from my work. Like I'm very connected to my art, but at the same time it's like separate, it's not like me, who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's intentional or if it's because of like the nature of painting on the street.
Uh-huh.
You paint and then you leave it there. Like, you can't really be attached to the artwork. So it kind of just becomes like this thing that I'm not, like, whatever happens to it, happens to it. I'm not going to, like,
you're
try.
Deliberately distancing yourself so you don't have to deal with separation anxiety.
Basically. I'm disassociating from my art. So, yeah, and I just feel like the work, it's not like a direct story about me. So if you look at my art, you're not really gonna be like, oh, I know Nadia now. So I think that's why I struggle with turning myself into art, like doing self-portraits.
So the art is very definitely an art star, and you were very definitely Nadia.
Yes.
That's kind of beautiful. Right, and then one final question. If you were going to draw Nadia, what animal or flower or piece of the natural world would you use to represent Nadia's inner self and not Nardstar's inner self?
I have thought about this and I think it's a panda.
Okay.
Yeah. Definitely a panda.
I'm not going to ask why, I just think that's lovely. I'm kind of surprised it's not an African animal.
Yeah. I think it's the, like, the panda qualities, you know, like the kind of like the chubby cuteness and the clumsiness, because I think, like, as an artist, people kind of see me as like this person that's just like breaking all these stereotypes, like the kind of like this toughness.
Uh-huh.
But if you know, like me, I'm just a really cutesy, silly person, like with my family and things. So the panda would be like the real version.
That's brilliant. Nadia, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
A huge thank you to Nadia for taking the time to speak with me for this episode and for creating imagery that illuminated my stay in her city. If you would like to hear more about her, and indeed if you want to see some of her amazing wall art, which you most definitely should, then head along to treesacrowd.fm where you will find a link to her website. And I will be back in a month for the final episode of this African mini-series. Until then, thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Oh, the oak and the ivy. Oh, the oak and the ivy. Oh.
This podcast is produced by OG Podcasts. Find out more at ogpodcasts.co.uk.